Good morning, and welcome to the Immunic Therapeutics conference call and webcast. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jessica Breu. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Alyssa. Good morning also from my side, and welcome to Immunic's conference call and webcast to discuss Friday's press release regarding the full unblinded data set from our phase II EMPhASIS trial of IMU-838 in patients with relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis. My name is Jessica Breu, Head of Investor Relations and Communications at Immunic. Speaking on today's call are Dr. Daniel Vitt, our Chief Executive Officer and President, and Dr. Andreas Müller, our Chief Medical Officer. Before we begin, I would like to remind you that this webcast may contain forward-looking statements. Such statements can be identified by words such as may, will, expect, anticipate, estimate, or words with a similar meaning. Such statements involve a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause Immunic's actual results to differ materially from those discussed here. Please note that these forward-looking statements reflect Immunic's opinion only as of the date of this presentation, and it undertakes no obligation to revise or publicly release the results of any revision to these forward-looking statements in light of new information or future events. Please refer to Immunic's SEC filings for a more detailed description of the risk factors that may affect Immunic's results and these forward-looking statements. I would now like to turn the call over to Dr. Daniel Vitt. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Jessica, and a warm welcome to today's call of Immunic also from my side. After the excellent top-line data in early August, we are now very excited about the full data we obtained from our clinical phase II EMPhASIS trial in relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, which also were presented at the ACTRIMS MS Virtual 2020 meeting last Friday by Dr. Bob Fox from Cleveland Clinic. In order to make data broadly accessible, we want to share these data with you today on this call. IMU-838 is intended to be a selective once-daily medication for relapsing-remitting MS patients with a well-balanced combination of favorable safety and convenience profile with robust clinical activity. This expanded data set confirms our previously announced positive top-line results for this indication. Now I would like to hand over to our Chief Medical Officer, Andreas Müller, to share more details how nicely IMU-838 is matching this profile based on detailed data obtained from EMPhASIS phase II trial.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. The first slide we had already shown you before basically that goes to the need of new medications being developed for the MS disease and the MS community and the patients. Basically, it shows that this is a long-term disease, and the patients suffer from this disease for life, and therefore you need a medication that really has a long persistence and has a low risk of treatment discontinuations over this long period of time. The next slide summarizes the positioning that we're intending for IMU-838 in patients with relapsing remitting MS. First of all, I think we would like to see a very robust efficacy with a low discontinuation rate, and both has been shown in the top-line data already. We would like to show an absence of hepatotoxicity signals we had already presented in the top-line data. What we're showing you today is more or less that for all of the secondary efficacy endpoints and also for the biomarkers, like serum neurofilament, we have seen the same signals in favor of IMU-838 versus placebo, which is quite consistent with the top-line data. we are reporting today the full results of our phase 2 study of IMU-838 in patients with relapse and remitting MS. And since Bob Fox, our coordinating investigator, had presented the results last Friday at the ACTRIMS meeting, we're able to provide now more details of the trial. The data presented today are from the 24-week blinded treatment period, where serial MRI examinations and other evaluations were being performed, and a long-term safety extended treatment is still ongoing in this trial, and that overall 189 patients are still on this long-term treatment using IMU-838. So let's start with efficacy results. We had already reported that this 70% reduction of MRI lesion compares what was shown for our 30 milligram dose of IMU-838. And this shows that the key primary and key secondary endpoint was met in this trial with high statistical significance. We had already reported that this 70% reduction of MRI lesions compares quite favorably with the same of similar MRI endpoints being assessed in phase 2 trials of other first-line and oral medications already approved in relapsing MS. To our mind, this shows that in terms of potential efficacy, IMU-838 may be able to rival any of the current first-line or oral drugs, and if this is translated into clinical endpoints in phase 3 trials, establish a strong contender in relapsing MS. As some analysts already remarked, we fully agree with that. This forest plot shows how different subgroups contributed to the efficacy results of the 30 milligram dose of IMU-838 in this trial. In summary, all subgroups and populations show a benefit of IMU-838. This means that the success of this trial did not depend on the preferred presence of a certain subgroup in this phase 2 trial. This also gives us confidence for future trials. It seems that the efficacy of IMU-838 should be able to be replicated independent which particular population is being investigated, and the success of future trials may not depend on the presence of a certain group of patients for this drug. During the presentation of top-line results, you had already asked, and rightfully so, about the time frame of MRI lesion suppression effects of IMU-838. We are happy to provide the time course data now displayed in this slide for the combined unique active MRI lesions, basically the totality of MRI lesions. The data show that the robust suppression of MRI lesions already starts at the first MRI time points at 6 and 12 weeks, and the relative effect of MRI lesions, just with smaller absolute numbers, is the same as after 24 weeks. This quick onset of MRI lesion suppression is consistent with the favorable pharmacokinetic profile of IMU-838, showing that therapeutic trough levels of this drug are reached within 6 to 8 days after receiving the full dose. Some of the historical phase 2 data in other phase 2 trials of drugs in relapsing MS have also used the more defined group of gadolinium-enhanced MRI lesions as major endpoint in trials. These are basically brain lesions that are only visible after injecting an MRI contrast agent. These gadolinium-enhancing lesions often are considered the most acute lesions. IMU-838 also shows the suppression of gadolinium-enhancing lesions to the same magnitude as of all MRI lesions. In addition, the suppression of gadolinium-enhancing lesions again starts at the earliest MRI time points. We had already reported as top-line data that we had observed an effect on relapse activity for IMU-838, despite this being a very short trial of 24 weeks and having only roughly 70 patients in each treatment arm. This is an important signal as relapse-related endpoints are likely the main endpoints in the upcoming phase 3 trials. This preliminary activity of IMU-838 on relapse-related endpoints is also supported by a Kaplan-Meier analysis of time to first relapse. The curves of IMU-838 treatment and placebo already start to separate over the short 24-week period. besides relapse activity, the other very important clinical consideration for MS patients is disability, which is known to slowly accumulate over the years or decades of this disease. Disability is primarily measured by the EDSS score. This slide shows how many patients in a different treatment arms developed a 1-point increase, basically a worsening, in the EDSS disability score over the 24 weeks of this trial. It shows a signal that the IMU-838 treatment arms performed better than placebo in this endpoint. Please note that due to the duration of this trial, the disability could not be confirmed after an additional 3 or 6 months duration, something that's generally done in phase 3 trials. So the absolute numbers of events should not be compared with data from phase 3 trials. The data on unconfirmed disability progression are, however, in line with other secondary endpoints, for example, the biomarker neurofilament light chain. Neurofilament light chain is a blood biomarker that has gained large prominence in the MS community over the last years. Neurofilaments are essential components of neurons, the long electrical conductors of a nerve cell. When neurons are damaged because of a trauma or a disease, their components, including neurofilaments, are released first into the cerebrospinal fluid and then also reach the bloodstream. Testing the neurofilament concentration in blood serum can therefore provide insights into the degree of neuronal damage. As they are exclusively expressed in neurons, neurofilaments, and in particular neurofilament light chain, have been identified as promising biomarkers of neuronal cell damage in many neurodegenerative diseases, including multiple sclerosis. We are very excited to have observed a substantial drop in serum neurofilament levels following 24 weeks of IMU-838 treatment, whereas neurofilaments slightly increased overall in the placebo group. As reference, ocrelizumab decreased the serum neurofilament light chain levels by 18% over 24 weeks of treatment. This slide summarizes the patient-reported outcome of the treatment satisfaction questionnaire for medication, TSQM. The results show that patients have the perception of efficacy and convenience using IMU-838 and show high overall satisfaction with the IMU-838 treatment. So now to summarize the efficacy data from this phase 2 trial of IMU-838 in relapsing remitting MS, primary and key secondary endpoints were met with high statistical significance. Robust efficacy was demonstrated for both investigated doses of IMU-838. The data of suppression of MRI activity is encouraging and compares favorably to other first-line oral medications. Robust effect of MRI lesion suppression is observed early and also for gadolinium-enhancing lesions. Secondary clinical endpoints also provide noticeable signal and numerical benefits for for IMU-838 treatment arms as compared to placebo. Positive signals on ARR, annualized relapse rate, time to relapse, and unconfirmed disability, despite the study's relatively small size and short duration of the blinded treatment, is encouraging. Biomarker data also confirmed objectively the effect of IMU-838 on neuronal damage, especially because of this robust decrease in serum neurofilament that we have shown, which is evidence for potential neuroprotective activity of IMU-838. And patients report a high satisfaction score with IMU-838 treatment. So let's quickly talk about safety and tolerance now. For top line data, we had already reported the very low treatment discontinuation rates for IMU-838, basically indicating a very encouraging combination of tolerability and efficacy. For the 30 milligram group of IMU-838, basically only 2 of 71 patients discontinued treatment within the first 24 weeks. We had already reported that this very low discontinuation rate of 2.8% in the 30 milligram dose group compares quite favorably with discontinuation rates from phase 2 trial of other first-line oral medications already approved in relapsing MS. To our mind, this shows an overall encouraging tolerance profile while providing a sense of efficacy to patients. This current slide reiterates again that the overall rate of treatment-emergent adverse events was quite similar between IMU-A3A treatment arms and placebo, and only three patients experienced serious adverse events in this trial. This more detailed slide gives you a full summary of the most common treatment-emergent adverse events in this trial. There were very few adverse events with rates higher than 2% of the overall population, and those common adverse events were quite unspecific in nature. IMU-838 and its action through the target DHODH was shown to have a biological selectivity towards metabolically highly activated cells. Animal data had also confirmed that even high doses of euclidine was the active component of IMU-838, were unable to cause bone marrow depression or general anti-proliferative effects. Consistent with such data, and shown in the full slide deck released on Friday, there was no single event of neutropenia or lymphopenia during IMU-838 treatment in arms of this trial. We believe that this selective effect on the cells of the immune system may also be the reason that infections and infestations are no more prevalent during IMU-838 treatment than during placebo treatment. This slide summarizes that the adverse events with IMU-838 were generally mild in nature, and no adverse events of severe intensity occurred in the IMU-838 treatment arms. Now quickly again, the summary regarding delivery events. The rate of predefined liver events, which includes clinical adverse events as well as laboratory investigations, was not increased in the IMU-838 treatment arms versus placebo. Even more important, no Hy's Law cases occurred in this trial. These are basically concurrent increases of liver enzymes and bilirubin, which by regulatory authorities are considered potential indicator events for drug-induced liver injury. Elevations of liver enzymes were also rare and similar to placebo group. In summary, no signal for hepatotoxicity has been observed for IMU-838 in this MS patient population. So let's summarize the safety and tolerance information from this phase 2 trial of IMU-838. Consistent with prior data sets in other patient populations, administration of IMU-838 in this trial was observed to be well tolerated. And this trial replicated the favorable safety profile also in the relapsing remitting MS patient population. In general, the tolerance profile of IMU-838 is similar to placebo. Very low rates of treatment discontinuations, if even lower than the placebo group, have been shown. IMU-838 discontinuation rates compared quite favorably to other medications in relapsing remitting MS. This indicates an encouraging combination of tolerability and a sense of efficacy for these patients. Very few adverse events were seen with moderate or high incidence rates, more than 2% of the overall population. The observed adverse events are generally mild in nature. No increase in liver or kidney events were seen as compared to placebo, and no signal for hepatotoxicity or elevation of liver enzymes have been observed. No or rare adverse events indicating general immunosuppressive or general antiproliferative effects were also seen. No increases of infection and infestation as compared to placebo is an important feature of this treatment, and there's no generalized effect on hematological parameters, laboratory values, and no adverse events of neutropenia or lymphopenia have seen in the IMU-838 treatment arm. So this is a quite condensed summary of our full data of the IMU-838 phase 2 trial in MS. So back to you, Daniel.
Yeah, thank you, Andreas. Cool data. So very excited about that. And you can imagine we also spent some thoughts on understanding what does it mean in respect to position of 8-8 in the landscape of current MS-based therapies. And as earlier said, we believe that specifically a drug with this right balance of safety and tolerability on the one hand and robust activity on the other hand is needed. And it looks like IMU-8 could be a very good fit with the desire to combine favorable tolerance and robust efficacy. In this illustration here, we calculated the MRI lesion suppression in percent versus placebo, and on the x-axis, the ratio of treatment discontinuation for the approved dose strength of current oral and base medications as a parameter for safety and tolerability. And I think this graph nicely underlines that the properties of IMU-8 are matching well with the current unmet medical needs for relapse-remitting MS. So let me summarize what we have learned about 838 in the field of multiple sclerosis. IMU-838 has shown a robust MRI lesion suppression, very low discontinuation rate for IMU-838 treatment, treated relapse-remitting MS patients, substantially below placebo, which indicates an encouraging combination of tolerability and efficacy, and an absence of hepatotoxicity signals. As well learned from the full data set, IMU-8 has also demonstrated a robust decrease in serum neurofilament light chain, a biomarker for axonal damage, compared with the placebo arm. This provides evidence of IMU-8's potential neuroprotective activity. IMU-8 could therefore be the new safe and efficacious treatment option of choice for early relapse-remitting MS patients. At this point, I would like to thank you all for listening, and we're now happy to answer questions. Moderator, we can now open the line for the Q&A session.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble the roster. The first question comes from Yasmeen Rahimi from Piper Sandler. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. This is Rachel on for Yasmeen. Thanks for taking our question. Congratulations on the amazing data. How important is this transparent and quick data set in discussions with strategics and potential partners? So what is the significance of the data set in that regard? And where are you in regards to partnerships? Thank you.
Okay, maybe I take that question. Thank you, Yasmeen, for the question and for listening to the call and also for your notes. Let me shortly touch what does it mean. So what I hope that is specifically the graph I showed in the second last slide underlines that this drug here is positioned in a space where currently we don't see any drugs with the same positioning, and the combination of safety, tolerability, and robust efficacy, I think, is something which is really urgently needed. And of course, that's the most important piece in every discussion we have or we will have with potential partners and going forward with this program. I can't give you more details on ongoing discussions, as you may understand.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's very helpful. So our next question is, given the comprehensive liver safety data, do you believe that this analysis will be sufficient for the FDA to not require a hepatotoxicity black box, which was seen for teriflunomide? Thank you.
Yeah, so this is Andreas answering this. I think we're on a good path towards avoiding a black box warning, but I think there's more data needed, and we just have to continue acquire in more patients with longer follow-up the same kind of data. But at the moment, I don't think we would be on the path of getting a black box warning, given the very strong data that we have, not only from this trial, but also from previous trials, from phase one trials, where we measured certain biomarkers on hepatotoxicity or drug-induced liver injury. So At the moment, we don't see any signal that would indicate to any regulatory agency that a black box warning would be warranted. But again, more data is needed down the road.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. So with this data out, have you heard any feedback, or what is the sentiment among physicians and providers who have seen the data, and how do they think it would fit in with current treatment options? Thanks.
So I think I can probably report as well that we have a very good group of clinical collaborators that has helped us not only to shape the phase two trial and to understand the positioning of our drug in MS, but also to help us already discuss our phase three plans and basically how to go forward and what's important going forward. And we have, of course, shared these data with them, and we have seen that they were very excited about these data. And this, I think their excitement comes not only from the MRI data, but I think from the totality of the data that you really have not only the MRI data, but all of the other data, all of the secondary endpoints, and especially neurofilament going in one direction and being very consistent, which is not often the case with these trials because you do a lot of endpoints and some endpoints tend to be stronger or some endpoints tend to be weaker. But here we have really seen a very consistent effect in both efficacy and also a very consistent profile for safety, and I think that really excited them, and they are quite happy to and currently working with us on basically getting more details onto the phase three plans.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much. That's very helpful, and congratulations again on the great data.
Thank you, Yasmin.
Yeah, thank you, Yasmin.
The next question today comes from Matt Kaplan of Ladenburg Thalmann. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Congrats on the data. I guess given the robust phase two results that you've presented here with respect to efficacy and safety, can you describe your phase three plans a little bit more and where you are in preparing for the initiation of phase three?
Thanks, Matt. So this is Andreas again. So we are not yet ready to talk more specifically about our phase three plans. And I think one of the things, of course, that we are quite excited about is that both of these doses in this phase two trial have really performed very well. And there's no difference between the 30 and the 45 milligram dose when it comes to efficacy, but also in terms of safety. There's no safety they're equal in the safety profile as well. So, and I think one of the questions that we're currently elaborating is that we believe that, of course, the most effective dose, which would be the 30 milligram dose, is the dose that likely would be the dose that regulatory agency would like us to go forward with in phase three. But given that we had both of these doses performed equally well, there is the possibility that regulatory agencies would like to include a second dose in a phase three trial. And this is something that personally I think we all would like to avoid in the phase three program going forward. And that's why we're having additional discussions about how to address this and how to make sure that regulatory agencies agree with us that a single dose for phase three going forward is important to us. And that's something that probably needs a little bit more work and thinking together with our clinical and statistical experts and regulatory experts. And that's why I think we would like to maybe take a little bit more time to make sure that we avoid that risk of a second dose group, a second active dose group in phase three.
Okay, that's helpful. And in terms of the impact on neurofilament light chain, can you describe more about kind of the mechanism you believe is active here in terms of the neuroprotective properties of 838?
So I think MS, of course, is a autoimmune disease where the immune system attacks the neurons and destroys these neurons and causes basically an inflammation around these neurons that are attacked, and that shows up as these MRI lesions in MR imaging. Basically, a DHODH inhibitor like IMU-838 is able to target and selectively target these highly activated, metabolically activated immune cells, and that's what we have shown before, and where we have shown new data and published data that shows that there's this selective effect of these highly activated immune cells. And these highly activated immune cells are those cells that are likely destroying the neurons in these MS patients. So by attacking these immune cells that are attacking neurons, you are avoiding or you are basically depleting those cells that are attacking these neurons, and that's why you likely have less destructions of neurons. And since these neurofilament proteins or peptides are part of the neurons, and very exclusively they only happen in these neurons, this is a very good marker basically of less neurons being attacked and less neurons being destroyed under treatment as compared to placebo. And that's probably as far as I would think the explanation that we currently have for the decrease in neurofilament. And very consistently, you have seen this with other effective treatments that basically an effect that protects neurons or avoids the destruction of neurons show up as a decrease in neurofilament. And you also have seen that some of these trials who didn't show a neuroprotective effect didn't also show a effect on neurofilament, and for example with ibutilas. So I think there's some evidence that it really parallels the destruction of neurons and the protection of these neurons to be maintained.
Okay, thank you. And then last question, in terms of how do you think 838, when it potentially comes to market, will be positioned given its low discontinuation rates versus other oral therapies that you've seen now, I guess, through the phase two results?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. Thank you, Matt. So, and that's, of course, I think the most important question here. So where to position that? And I think we clearly here hitting an unmet medical need of something which is really well-tolerated. And you can see that, I think, in the discontinuation rates. And the same robust efficacy, and that's why Andreas is pronouncing the neurofilament thing, because it hints to potential neuroprotective effects, and therefore for the key long-term unmet medical need, which is preventing disability progression. And to my knowledge, I think this is a really unique profile for the time being, and therefore we think for early diagnosed patients, this would really offer something new and something where the decision making would be easy to say, okay, this is the drug, maybe the first drug to use or the second drug to use in the treatment scheme. And given the safety, also may allow patients for a long time treatment and to stay on the drug for a long time with low discontinuation rates. And that was said by a lot of independent investigators and experts. So we hope that exactly that space can be filled with our drug.
Thanks, Daniel. Thank you, Andreas. Thank you.
The next question comes from Segbe Jala of Roth Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question and congrats on the data. I think this first one is perhaps for Andreas. I know Abadi is only approved for relapsed refractory MS, but I'm kind of just curious on the mechanism of action of DHODH inhibitors and specifically yours, and possibly having efficacy in secondary progressive MS.
So this is Andreas. I think that's a good question. I think not all drugs that work in relapsing remitting will be effective in secondary progressive as well, because I think the neuroprotective effects are potentially more important for secondary progressive. But there's also something unknown still about secondary progressive that really what drives the disability worsening despite having no relapses. So it's kind of a non-relapse related disability worsening, and there is different theories how basically it comes to this kind of ongoing disability worsening, and it's a little bit of speculation why certain drugs work and why some don't. One of the theories is that you have a slowly burning virus infection in the brain that leads to these disability worsening that's not relapse related. And of course, that would be something that a DHODH inhibitor that has very broad antiviral activities could be very effective on. And also, I think that, for example, CD20 antibodies, anti-CD20 antibodies that basically target B cells is a very good hint in that puzzle as well, because, for example, EBV infected cells or EBV virus is dormant in B cells, for example. So I think there's some evidence why targeting maybe a slowly progressing EBV infection might be one way of treating secondary progressive. However, I think in general there's still not complete agreement that this is really the underlying mechanism, or it's the only underlying mechanism for secondary progressive. So for the moment, I think we have focused on relapse and remitting, as this is 80% of the MS patients. They basically have this relapse and remitting disease. It's also a way, I think, in terms of our positioning, to really go after this as a base medication for early MS patients. That is, like Daniel said, their first or second drug. They can stay on this drug for a long period of time. They can maintain their social activities. These are young patients that really need to go or want to go to work, have a professional life, have a social life, and a drug that really doesn't interfere with their life is very important. And that was very important to us. That's why we think that the properties of the drug really lend itself to being such a drug that is an oral medication that is convenient for first line or early therapy in MS patients. However, I see that there's a potential, at least, given the hypotheses on secondary progressive, that this could be used in secondary progressive as well. However, I don't think we are planning to address this right away. I think we will probably go forward with the phase 3 trial that only includes relapse and remitting MS for now.
Thank you. And so we'll keep the model just to relapse remitting MS. And then just a follow-up question, because I know you can't say too much about the phase 3 study, but based on the very positive results that we've seen, not only relative to Aubagio, but other approved MS drugs, and possibly even the soon-to-be-approved ponesimod, wanted to know, for the phase 3 trial, are you thinking about doing a head-to-head with Aubagio, or based on this really impressive data, you're thinking about potentially doing the head-to-head against the ponesimod, for example?
So I think for phase 3 plan, there's usually a little bit of balance that you have to do. First of all, we would like to do certain things in terms of positioning the drug right in the market, and very likely that includes having an active comparator. I think that's quite important, I think, for our own phase 3 plans. On the other hand, some of these regulatory agencies, they really would like to see establish also the advantage over placebo first as one of the ways to address whether the drug really works in terms of clinical endpoints, not only MRI endpoints, but clinical endpoints in a significant way. And I think our phase 3 plans that you will see will include both. I think some placebo control trial as well as a trial with actively controlled comparator.
That was helpful. And then just the last one, Daniel, I'm a little disappointed. I thought we would get a generic name soon for this molecule. So looking forward to it. I think it will be, I think it's certainly deserving with this data set that we've seen.
Oh, we have the INN code already for that. So the vidofludimus calcium, that's the INN code for that. So non-proprietary name. Maybe we should emphasize that more. This is INN88, sorry for that, it's still our lab code. You can call it vidofludimus calcium.
Thanks, guys, and congrats again on the data.
Thank you, Sagi.
Again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. The next question comes from Liana Musitios of Wedbush Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Andreas for Liana. Also, congrats on the data. Our question, the first question is on the PRO. Likely agencies and payers will want to see or include that in the phase three. And you're likely to kind of probably provide a wider a PRO than the TSQM. But for what we have at the moment, could you maybe discuss the placebo value there? And does it seem a bit high?
So thank you, Andreas. This is the other Andreas. I think you have to understand that some of these patients, of course, are blinded, and some of these questions are that the TSQM provides is quite general. So they ask, how do you feel about the effectiveness? How do you feel about side effects? How convenient is your treatment? And I think some of the, given that this is an oral placebo, that you get relatively high marks on side effects and convenience, I think is not unexpected. And therefore, also, I think the terms of global satisfaction, I think, is not unexpected. Where you see the most differences is probably effectiveness, and of course, that's something you would expect, but this is a modulating disease. So, certainly, I think you see this in the data as well, that, for example, some of these patients receiving placebo, they have no clinical events or they have very few MRI lesions, and that's quite normal because it's a disease where some patients will have a relapse, some patients have much more MRI activity for maybe half a year, and then they don't have something for a while. So I think given the nature of the disease, and it's not surprising to me, and I think the biggest change you see here is for effectiveness. It's more of the sense of effectiveness, of course. These patients don't measure their effect. They don't know what the MRI activity is. It's just their sense when they take the drug, how they feel. And I think, to me, that's not necessarily surprising that placebo here has high rates as well, given the nature of the disease and also that is an oral placebo that's quite convenient to take.
Okay, thanks for that. One additional here. So it was asked earlier a bit with the discontinuation rates. In previous slides, you've mentioned or you've had a slide on the real-world discontinuation rates currently approved therapies. How do you guys see the remarkably lower discontinuation rate for A3 in that context?
So I think discontinuation rates in clinical trials always have two components. One component, of course, everybody can understand, is the safety and tolerability. If you have side effects that you don't like, or it makes you tired, or you have basically a general effect on your mood or something like that, I think you tend to be more eager to discontinue your treatment. And I think that's the component that everybody understands. The other thing, of course, the other component is, and you will see this with some of these drugs, is efficacy. So patients who don't have a sense of efficacy, who feel their disease has become worse than before the trial, and of course they know that they're in a placebo-controlled trial, they often tend to also try to discontinue because they, we allow here a extended treatment after you have done your blinded treatment. So it has both of these components. So the very low discontinuation rate here, I think, for IMU-838, especially versus placebo. Yes, in placebo, you probably have more of those patients who have a sense that they're not treated to the right extent, and that's why they're discontinuing here. So we see these very low discontinuation rates as really the balance between the very favorable safety profile, but also the sense that your disease is being addressed by this treatment that you're taking. And I think both contribute to these very low discontinuation rates.
Thank you guys, and congrats again on the impressive data.
Thank you, Andreas.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Jessica Broy for any closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you, Alyssa. We truly hope that you all can share our excitement about this wonderful phase 2 data for IMU-838 in relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis. Down the road, Immunic is expecting even more therapeutic data and other indications. We have phase 2 trials ongoing in ulcerative colitis, primary sclerosing cholangitis, and COVID-19, so please stay tuned. And with this, I would like to close the presentation. Thank you very much for attending.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.